Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record, program number 850, update on fascism in Ukraine. This is being recorded on June 14th of the year 2015. We have a lot of material for this program. I can't stress strongly enough that listeners take advantage of the long article-length written descriptions that are available, as well as the already massive body of information available on Ukraine. We have a lot of material to cover, so I may not have time to get to all of the relevant points of information in the broadcast. So it is already in the description that will be published after the recording of the program. And I'm going to begin by giving you a brief rundown. The members of the 173rd Airborne Brigade are, in fact, training some of the so-called Punisher Battalions in the Ukraine. Those are paramilitary organizations that basically have been whitewashed by the Western media. The bulk of them appear to be overtly fascist. The one that is the most overtly so is the Azov Battalion, SS rune and the swastika on their helmets. The training was to begin, or apparently did begin, on April 20th, according to the Ukrainian Interior Minister. That is Adolf Hitler's birthday. And in a rare beam of light that has been shown into the Ukrainian darkness, the U.S. House of Representatives has voted to withhold training and arms to the Azov Battalion because of its Nazi orientation. I'll talk more about that later, but the paramilitary organizations like Azov are something of the focal point of a modified limited hangout because, in fact, the institution of Ukrainian fascism can be traced from the pre-World War II period that we talked about in our interviews with Peter Lavenda, specifically 838 and 839. All the way through the World War II and then the post-World War II period when the OUNB and the UPA jumped to the CIA State Department entity, the Office of Policy Coordination, and were incorporated into the Republican Party in the person of the Crusade, in the entity, the Crusade for Freedom and the Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations, which was its primary element. And then, during the closing phase of the Cold War, those same elements were projected back into Ukraine. They were heavily represented in Ronald Reagan's administration and have evolved up into the present situation, with Viktor Yushchenko's government having whitewashed the OUNB and set the stage for this. And Yaroslav Stetsko's personal secretary in the early 80s, Roman Zvorich, is a key advisor to Petro Poroshenko and was Minister of Justice, the equivalent of Attorney General, under not only Yushchenko but both Timoshenko governments. So although the Punisher Battalions like Azov are the focal point, they are only part of the problem and are really in many ways more symptomatic than we have been told. The head of Pravi Sektor, one of those OUNB fascist organizations, Dmytro Yarosh, has been appointed as a top advisor to the head of the Ukrainian army. And not too long after that, Dmytro Yarosh, again a member of parliament, an advisor to the head of the Ukrainian army, and a fellow whose Pravi Sektor paramilitary group openly admiring of Stefan Bandera and the OUNB, are part of the volunteer battalions in Ukraine. Dmytro Yarosh announced on Facebook that his organization would attack a gay rights parade in Kiev earlier this month. They did just that, attacking the parade and the police who were attempting to protect it with fireworks and nail bombs as well. They were waiting in the back streets and chased the panicked marchers down those alleys. Also, Dmytro Yarosh and his Pravi Sektor had served as enforcers for one of the top Ukrainian oligarchs, a guy named Igor Kolomoyskoy, and that is spelled various ways, depending on the transliteration from the Cyrillic alphabet. Kolomoiskoye holds forth in many parts of Ukraine, in particular the province of Odessa, where in the trade union house, private sector and similar elements burned some 40-plus pro-Russian demonstrators to death while they chanted SS slogans and painted SS graffiti outside. Kolomoiskoye has come under fire from the Ukrainian government, and they wanted to diminish his role as an oligarch in Odessa. What they did was to appoint the former Georgian president Mikhail Saakashvili as governor of Odessa. He wasn't even a Ukrainian citizen. He was the president of Georgia who launched a sneak artillery attack on a sleeping village in a breakaway section of Georgia that precipitated a war with Russia back in 2008. He has had to flee his native country, the country of which he was president, because of human rights and corruption charges. He was appointed head of, as governor of Odessa, in order to basically give Kolomoiskoye and his entourage a graceful exit. It turns out that Kolomoiskoye's Privat companies, that's spelled P-R-I-V-A-T, were heavily invested in Georgia and had a very good relationship with Georgia and presumably Mr. Saakashvili as well. So in other words, meet the new bosses, same as the old bosses, more crony capitalism in Odessa. The new Ukrainian government has apparently engaged in a systematic campaign of assassinations of opposition political figures and journalists who are critical of its policies. Sometimes they are portrayed as suicides, and sometimes they admit that this is a murder. But basically, it would appear that in this country, which is trying to be an exemplar of, quote, EU values, and that people like Victoria Nuland, an assistant secretary of state under George W. Bush, who was held over by Barack Obama, one of a number of mistakes he made. The criticism is that the rallying cry is that, well, the Ukrainians share our values, and they share EU values, in addition to attacking gay rights marches that apparently also includes systematic political assassination. Ukraine is moving to standardize its military equipment and tactics and intelligence with NATO. And I would also note that the president of Ukraine, Petro Poroshenko, has openly been threatening to invade Crimea and reinvade the Donbass. That will certainly reignite the conflict in eastern Ukraine. If they try to invade Crimea, that might very well precipitate a third world war. Also, I would note in passing that a top U.S. photo reconnaissance official was killed in the German wing's crash crashed in France. It turns out that crash took place because the co-pilot deliberately crashed the plane. It was made out that he had psychiatric problems or psychological problems and was under psychiatric care, which may very well have been the case. One of the things I wonder, and this is pure speculation, certainly, the German intel services have the same mind control capabilities that the U.S. developed. I wonder if he might have been a mind control job, because one of the things we have pointed out in the past is that the, quote, reconnaissance satellite photos proving Russian invasion of Ukraine, etc., actually are coming from a private company called Digital Globe, headed up by a former official in Ronald Reagan's Strategic Defense Initiative, also known as Star Wars. These are not U.S. reconnaissance satellite photos. Robert Perry of Consortium News, one of the few people to break the media lockdown on Ukraine, has pointed out that U.S. reconnaissance photo experts did not see, they said there is no Russian invasion of Ukraine, although they have provided some assistance to some of the Russian ethnic Russians in eastern Ukraine, such as light arms and presumably some training. And even the Russian government has admitted that volunteers are fighting there, but that there has been no Russian invasion of Ukraine. And U.S. satellite reconnaissance experts believe that the missile that shot down the MH17 airliner, the Malaysian airliner, actually was fired by a Ukrainian government military battery, and the troops may very well have been drunk, as there were liquor bottles scattered all around the battery. I wonder if the late unfortunate Yvonne Selke, S-E-L-K-E, was perhaps targeted because she was dissenting. Again, that is pure speculation. Something that ought to scare the water out of the members of the listening audience. There was a computer attack on a UK organization that is involved with the development of nuclear weapons in the United Kingdom, and the information was rerouted to Ukraine. Andrei Beletsky, the head of the Azov Battalion, the openly Nazi SS-affiliated organization, has openly stated that they want to get nuclear weapons. So with information having been hacked and rerouted to Ukraine about nuclear weapons, well, if you are still not sleeping restlessly over what takes place in Ukraine, that should perhaps impel you in that direction. Again, we have a lot to cover. We may very well not get to all of it in the broadcast. It will be in the description. It is in the description for the record 850 that will be published after the program is recorded. Now, beginning with the material from the Stars and Stripes newsletter, or newspaper, I should say, that is the U.S. Armed Forces newspaper of March 31st of 2015, an AP story, U.S. Forces to hold exercises in Ukraine. The United States plans to send soldiers to Ukraine in April for training exercises with units of the country's National Guard. Ukraine's Interior Minister Arsen Avakov, A-R-S-E-N-A-V-A-K-O-V, said in a Facebook post on Sunday that the units to be trained include the Azov Battalion, a volunteer force that has attracted criticism for its far-right sentiments, including brandishing an emblem widely used in Nazi Germany. Avakov said the training will begin on April 20th. April 20th is Adolf Hitler's birthday, I suspect. The beginning of that date was chosen by the people in Ukraine, and they must be laughing their you-know-whats off after this. A rare shaft of light has penetrated the gloom vis-a-vis Ukraine, but I certainly would not wax optimistic over this. The Consortium News of June 12th of 2015 features an article by Robert Perry, U.S. House admits openly Nazi role in Ukraine. It reads in part as follows. When even the hawkish House of Representatives can't stomach these Nazi stormtroopers who have served as Kiev's tip of the spear against the end of the ethnic Russian population of eastern Ukraine, what does that say about the honesty and integrity of the New York Times when it finds these same Nazis so admirable? Yet on June 10th, the U.S. House of Representatives approved a bipartisan amendment to the Defense Appropriations Act from Representatives John Conyers, Jr., Democrat of Michigan, and Ted Yoho, Republican of Florida, that would block U.S. training of the Azov Battalion and would prevent transfer of shoulder-fired anti-aircraft missiles to fighters in Iraq and Ukraine. Well, again, that's good in and of itself, but it does not in any way affect the other Nazi and fascist units in Ukraine, nor does it address the ABN/OUNB orientation of the Ukrainian government as a whole. Indeed, when we get down to the appointment of former Georgian President Mikhail Saakashvili as the governor of the Ukrainian province of Odessa, it is just the latest appointment of an ABN and the old Promethean League-related Milieu to help govern Ukraine. The new finance minister of Ukraine, we will talk about her, is Natalie Jaresko, an American of Ukrainian extraction. Her assistant is a woman named Dronika Murilo, who is from Estonia, and other Georgians and Lithuanians have been appointed to key governmental positions in Ukraine as well. This is basically the anti-Bolshevik bloc of nations, Milieu, that was a consortium of Eastern European fascist groups that was put together by Adolf Hitler. It then jumped to various Western intelligence services and became a key element of the Republican Party under the Crusade for Freedom and the ABN in turn, as we looked at in AFA Program 14 and in For the Record Programs 721 and 782 is where we looked at the Promethean League. Again, it basically was something like a pre-whacker-whacker. It was based in Poland, had very strong support from French intelligence. We also came back to the Promethean League in For the Record 824, an excellent essay by George Elias, and talked about that as something of a precursor for much of what is taking place today. And again, anti-Russian, and before that, anti-Soviet, and before that, anti-Russian coalition is liberally represented in the political appointments of the seated government in Ukraine.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. Long article-length descriptions of For the Record programs are available at spitfirelist.com, also featuring information that wasn't in the original program due to the limitations of time.
Even though the Azov Battalion is not going to be receiving training and weapons, let's, you know, be thankful for that. Other organizations that are, for all intents and purposes, just as bad, continue to wield influence in Ukraine. Witness the following. This is from Business Insider of April 6th of 2015, an Agence France-Presse story by Claire Rosenberg. Ukraine's far-right leader made army advisor in move to control militias, unquote. The controversial leader of Ukraine's ultra-nationalist private sector paramilitary group, which is fighting pro-Russian rebels alongside government troops, was made an army advisor Monday as Kiev seeks to tighten its control over volunteer fighters. Just how, quote, controlled, unquote, they are, we'll see in a minute. Coming on the anniversary of the start of fighting in Ukraine, the move marks a key step in government efforts to establish authority over the several private armies that share its goal of crushing pro-Russian separatists in the east, but do not necessarily operate under its control. While some such militias answer to the Interior Ministry and receive funding, the powerful private sector or right sector militia, which currently claims 10,000 members, including reservists, but will not say how many are deployed at the front, have until now refused to register with the authorities. Its posture is expected to change following Monday's announcement by the Defense Ministry of the appointment of its leader, Dmytro Yarosh, as an advisor to the Army Chief of Staff, Viktor Muzhenko, M-U-Z-H-E-N-K-O, skipping down, attempting to deflect criticism of private sector, a political analyst named Taras Tarasbereslevets, said, quote, "I don't remember hearing official criticism of Yarosh or the right sector by any country except Russia," he asked. Well, they're unabashed fascists. Dmytro Yarosh is a member of parliament. His organization is basically a paramilitary ally of the Ukrainian military. They are unabashed admirers of OUNB and Stefan Bandera and Yaroslav Stetsko and more. The article from Business Insider, which has a decidedly conservative and pro-Ukrainian orientation, said that this was a move to control the Ukrainian militias, appointing Dmytro Yarosh, who, by the way, was the assistant defense secretary in the interim government following the Maidan coup. The Claire Rosenberg Business Insider article said this was an attempt at controlling the militias. Well, just how effective that control is, perhaps it is actually an ambiguous use of the term control. Well, judge that and bear in mind that the head of this organization is a member of parliament, an advisor to the head of the Ukrainian army, and his organization, 10,000 strong, is one of the factors in the military landscape of Ukraine at the moment. From the Kiev Post of June 6th of 2015, an article by Johannes Vonberg Anderson, A-N-D-E-R-S-E-N, Right Sector Threatens Kiev Gay Pride March. Anti-gay groups in Ukraine, including the militant right sector, are threatening to stop a gay pride march planned for June 6th. Referring to the Old Testament and the Holy Bible, the right sector, which fields a battalion of soldiers to fight against Russia in eastern Ukraine, called gay people, quote, perverts, unquote, who, quote, need to be cured, unquote, and promised to, quote, prevent this sodomist gathering, unquote. There will be thousands of us, right sector spokesman Arsen, I'm not going to attempt the last name, Skoropadsky, I think, S-K-O-R-O-P-A-D-S-K-Y-I, told the Kiev Post. The parade named Equality March will take place on June 6th in Kiev. The organizers keep time and place secret until the last moment for safety reasons. And skipping down. Right sector leader Dmytro Yarosh has promised in a Facebook post that the group's members will, quote, put aside other business in order to prevent those who hate family, morality, and human nature from executing their plans. We have other things to do, but we'll have to deal with this evil too, he wrote, skipping down. He said that the event would, quote, spit on the graves of those who died and defended Ukraine, unquote. By the way, the Third Reich and the Nazis persecuted gays mercilessly, whereas Jews were forced to wear a yellow star on their concentration camp uniforms, and even before they were sent to camps on their clothes, gays were obliged to wear a pink triangle. And I would note that, sure enough, Pravi Sektor has made good on its promise. Also from the Kiev Post of that same day, June 6th of 2015, article by Stefan Wijboom, U-H-U-I-J-B-O-O-M, anti-gay extremists violently break up gay pride march in Kiev, several injured, many arrests. The article reads in part as follows. Protected by hundreds of police officers in Kiev's Obolon district, that's O-B-O-L-O-N, nearly 200 persons tried on June 6th to take part in the second gay pride parade in the last 3 years. But violence almost from the start marred the event and sent people fleeing in chaos and panic. Police broke up the gathering quickly, telling participants to leave because they could not guarantee their safety after dozens of extremists attacked the crowd and police with fireworks, fists, and nails. Several police officers and participants were injured, including one officer who suffered serious wounds after being attacked with fireworks and nail bombs. More than 20 extremists were arrested on suspicion of violence. Others escaped, including one man who shouted, quote, they should die, unquote, in reference to homosexuals. Many attackers identified themselves as part of the militant Pravi or Right Sector. Its leader, Member of Parliament Dmytro Yarosh, parenthetic, also an advisor to the head of the Ukrainian army, also fields a semi-autonomous battalion in the Ukrainian army. Yarosh, in a long Facebook post on June 5th, condemned equal rights for gays and pledged to stop the gatherings. And that they most assuredly did. I would note in passing the language, there's no such thing as a fascist or Nazi in Ukraine anymore. Really, pretty much every place. They talk about ultra-nationalists or far-right or something. If Adolf Hitler reincarnated today and began implementing his policies, our media would cover it like this. It would say, the German paleoconservative Adolf Hitler, whom critics accuse of pursuing an ultra-nationalist agenda. I mean, that is how they would do it. We live in the age of Orwell. Pravi Sektor, Azov Battalion, the OUNB heirs who are pulling Poroshenko's strings. They are not ultra-nationalists. They are fascists, and they were allied with the Third Reich in World War II. In addition to serving as a member of parliament, an advisor to the Ukrainian head of the Ukrainian army, and also a self-appointed anti-gay enforcer, Dmytro Yarosh and Pravi Sekhar have also served as enforcers for a fellow named Igor Kolomoyskoy. That's spelled various ways, depending on the transliteration from the Cyrillic alphabet. You'll see it, K-O-L-O-M-O-Y-S-K-I or K-Y-I. He is one of the Ukrainian oligarchs. He has achieved primacy in the Dnepropetrovsk area in Ukraine, and he used Pravi Sekhar, whom he helped to finance, basically to put down pro-Russian, ethnic Russian, anti-government separatists. From the German Foreign Policy.com newsletter of June 1st, 2015, Steinmeier and the oligarchs, unquote, we read the following, skipping now. By the way, Steinmeier is German Foreign Minister Walter Steinmeier, S-T-E-I-N-M-E-I-E-R, who is trying to keep the Minsk II ceasefire intact, because basically, if Ukraine is ever to get back on its feet economically, I would not hold my breath on that. The fighting has to stop. Skipping down. Kiev does not have control of the voluntary militia units fighting in eastern Ukraine. These militias are extremely nationalistic, some even openly fascist, who strictly reject the ceasefire and are repeatedly violating it. Therefore, Kiev cannot guarantee compliance with Minsk II. This is why German Foreign Minister Steinmeier went to Kiev and Dnepropetrovsk on Saturday to use his personal influence. Following the February 2014 coup, Dnepropetrovsk was quickly and systematically turned into the pro-Western government's outpost in the struggle against the anti-Maidan opposition. Located relatively close to the Donbass region, Dnepropetrovsk, that's D-N-E-P-R-O-P-E-T-R-O-V-S-K, with this, as with so many of the other Ukrainian names, I am probably mispronouncing it, but again, don't shoot the piano player, he's doing the best he can. Located relatively close to the Donbass region, Dnepropetrovsk became the scene of anti-Maidan protests in late 2013 and early 2014, and was therefore considered, quote, at risk, unquote, by the new authorities in Kiev. On March 2nd, billionaire Ihor Kolomoyskoy was appointed governor of Dnepropetrovsk, of Dnepropetrovsk Oblast, that's a district. Kolomoyskoy has the reputation of being one of Ukraine's richest and most ruthless oligarchs. The ramifications of his reign over Dnepropetrovsk can still be seen today. Kolomoyskoy has actually succeeded in largely neutralizing the anti-Maidan opposition in that area. Quote, the regional political forces in and around Dnepropetrovsk had, quote, already very early decided to move against the separatist and pro-Russian movement, unquote, retrospectively reports the German Green Party-affiliated Heinrich Böll Foundation, that's B-O-E-L-L. Already last year, crucial observers had vividly described Kolomoyskoy's, quote, resolute line of action, unquote, against dissidents. His deputy was quoted as saying, quote, we reached an agreement with some and instilled fear in the others, unquote. Quoting again, the job was taken care of by the thugs of the right sector, as Kolomoyskoy had offered them Dnepropetrovsk as their field of operation, as well as financial backing, unquote, reports the Ukraine expert Reinhard Lutterbach, L-A-U-T-E-R-B-A-C-H. In the Oblast's administration, the methods of the right sector, which in April of 2014 had set up its headquarters in Dnepropetrovsk, are euphemistically described as, quote, not always completely legal, but effective, unquote. Kolomoyskoy set a bounty for the dissidents or saboteurs who were caught, and he provided finances for the creation of a voluntary battalion of fascists. in last October's parliamentary election, Dmytro Yarosh, leader of the right sector, was able to win a direct mandate to the Verkhovna Rada of the Ukrainian National Parliament in Dnepropetrovsk.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. You can subscribe to the comments posted on the SpitfireList.com website, most of them by a brilliant contributing editor who uses the moniker Terra Fractal, specializing in, but by no means exclusively, economic and financial matters.
Another note in that regard, Ukraine is now coordinating not only the standards for its military equipment, but also intelligence with NATO. Also from GermanForeignPolicy.com, from April 10th of 2015, moving west, unquote. The Prime Minister of Ukraine has announced a new cooperation accord with NATO, under the terms of which will also intensify its cooperation with the Transatlantic Combat Alliance. In the domain of military intelligence and that of espionage as well. This announcement was made as NATO began initiating a large-scale deployment of military instructors in Ukraine. Ukraine is simultaneously transforming its arms industry production to meet NATO standards, which will permanently integrate that country into the structure of Western arms producers. So again, NATO military specifications are being standardized with the Ukrainian military. More skipping down. While NATO is intensifying its cooperation with Ukraine and its arms industry, fascist combat units are strengthening their influence within the country's armed forces. On February 17th, volunteer, including openly fascist-oriented battalions fighting in eastern Ukraine, united to form a, quote, joint staff, unquote, claiming they were, quote, an alternative to the chiefs of staff of the regular armed forces, unquote. So again, and bear in mind, too, that Poroshenko has openly been threatening to invade Crimea and to reinvade those areas in eastern Ukraine that were held by ethnic Russian separatists. That will certainly, at the very least, reignite the combat in Ukraine. If they try to invade Crimea, that could very well lead to a third world war, and all of us may very well die. So this is not something that people should be poo-pooing or relegating to the political back burner. Now, we already referred to Ihor Kolomoyskoy. He is a top Ukrainian oligarch, and the Poroshenko government has been trying to use his situation as something of a poster boy for the reforms it is supposedly initiating. In that regard, the newly appointed governor of Odessa is not Ihor Kolomoyskoy or one of his handpicked successors, but the former president of Georgia, Mikhail Saakashvili, who is not only a neocon favorite, but is a fugitive from the country he ruled because of criminal violations and corruption. Another article by Robert Perry from Consortium News of June 2nd of 2015, neocon fugitive given Ukrainian province. It reads in part, the latest political move by the U.S.-backed, quote, pro-democracy, unquote, regime in Ukraine was to foist on the people of Odessa the autocratic Georgian ex-president Mikhail Saakashvili, a neoconservative favorite and currently a fugitive from his own country, which is seeking him on charges of human rights violations and embezzlement. New York Times correspondent David M. Hershenzorn justified the imposition of a newly minted Ukrainian citizen on the largely Russian-speaking population of Odessa by saying that, quote, the Ukrainian public's general willingness to accept the appointment of foreigners to high-level positions underscores the deep lack of trust in any government after nearly a quarter century of mismanagement and corruption, unquote. But Hershenzorn made no apparent effort to gauge how willing the people of Odessa are to accept this choice of a controversial foreign politician to govern them. The pick was made by President Petro Poroshenko and is just the latest questionable appointment by the post-coup regime in Kiev. For instance, Shortly after the February 22, 2014 putsch that ousted elected President Viktor Yanukovych, the new U.S.-endorsed authorities in Kiev named thuggish oligarch Ihor Kolomoyskoy to be governor of Dnipropetrovsk in southeastern Ukraine. Kolomoyskoy, widely regarded as one of Ukraine's most corrupt politicians, ruled the region as his personal fiefdom until he was ousted by Poroshenko earlier this year in a dispute over Kolomoyskoy's use of strong-arm tactics to maintain its control of Ukrainian energy companies. Poroshenko has also granted overnight Ukrainian citizenship to other controversial foreigners who hold key positions in his government, including Finance Minister Natalie Jaresko, an ex-U.S. State Department official whose qualifications include enriching herself through her management of a $150 million U.S. taxpayer-financed fund for Ukraine. And there are others as well. And again, note that and this entire article, or most of this article, is in the description for the Record Program 850, when he was in exile in New York City, which is where he was before he returned to Ukraine, went to Ukraine. Former Georgian President Mikhail Saakashvili, again, the fellow who precipitated a war with Russia in 2008 by launching a surprise artillery barrage on a sleeping village. That is a war crime by any standard. He also was hanging out in Brooklyn and engaging in all sorts of things with nude artists and massage therapists and so forth. And now he is going to be governor of Odessa and supposedly to clean up corruption. Well, this is supposed to be this situation is supposed to be something of a poster child for the Poroshenko government's reform policies. In the parlance of the time, not so much. The Brian Mefford blog, that's Brian, B-R-I-A-N, M-E-F-F-O-R-D, of May 30th of 2015. Ukraine update, May 30th, skipping down. In appointing Saakashvili as Odessa governor, it would appear that Poroshenko has assigned a strong leader to govern a key region under pressure by the Russians. Faced with a tough decision among at least four Odessa political figures that could potentially shift the balance of power amongst competing business interests in the region, Poroshenko opted for an outsider, skipping down again. Perhaps more importantly, since it is oligarch Ihor Kolomoyskoy who is losing his hand-picked governor in the region, Saakashvili's appointment gives Kolomoyskoy a, quote, soft landing, unquote. This is because the oligarch's Privat, P-R-I-V-A-T, group of companies invested heavily in Georgia under Misha, that's Mikhail Saakashvili's presidency, and was pleased with the relationship. In other words, meet the new oligarch, same as the old oligarch. In other words, crony capitalist business as usual. Another interesting thing that took place, Ukraine is threatening to freeze its payments to foreign creditors in order to fund the war against the separatists in the east. The creditors are not pleased with this. An article from Yahoo News of June 12th of 2015, this is by Dmitry, D-M-I-T-R-Y, Zaks, Z-A-K-S. Ukraine says it may freeze debt payments to fund war. It reads in part, Ukraine's premier warned Friday that Kiev will freeze its debt repayments if no immediate deal is found with private lenders because it has to fund its escalating campaign against pro-Russian fighters. Skipping that, by the way, the Prime Minister is Arseniy Yatsenyuk, or Yats, as he was called by Victoria Nuland. Skipping down. Kiev is up against seasoned financial heavyweights such as U.S. investment firm Franklin Templeton, who believe that Ukraine actually has the funds stashed away in its central bank to repay the debts in full. This last sentence again, because it is a doozy. Kiev is up against seasoned financial heavyweights such as U.S. investment firm Franklin Templeton, who believe that Ukraine has the funds stashed away in its central bank to repay its debts in full. Ukraine's finance minister, Natalie Jurevsko, has firmly refused to do so, a position that has left the private lenders increasingly anxious. You bet. Another interesting thing about Arseniy Yatsenyuk threatening to suspend payments to Ukraine's lenders. I would also note that ultimately, as we looked at in the past, the U.S. taxpayers are on the hook for some of the Ukrainian debt. Is that the very same, quote, Yats, unquote, Arseniy Yatsenyuk, is being investigated for corruption. From the New York Times of May 17th of 2015, in Ukraine, corruption concerns linger a year after a revolution by that very same David M. Hershenzorn, something of an apologist for Ukraine. Skipping down, the Ukrainian parliament, in which pro-European parties control a huge majority, voted last month to create a special committee to investigate accusations that Mr. Yatsenyuk, a suave English speaker admired in the West, and his cabinet have presided over the embezzlement of more than $325 million from the state. And this is the guy that's saying, well, we may not be able to pay the lenders, we may have to suspend payments so we can finance the war against the separatists. Much has been made, again, of the alleged fact that, Ukraine shares our values. Judge that according to the following. Yet another article from Consortium News of April 3rd of 2015, this by William Blum. Mysterious deaths in Ukraine, unquote. Following the murder of Russian opposition leader and former Deputy Prime Minister Boris Nemtsov in Moscow on February 27th, the West had a field day, ranging from strong innuendo to outright accusation of a Kremlin-directed political murder. The Western media and politicians did not miss an opportunity to treat Russian President Vladimir Putin as a football practice dummy, skipping down. Meanwhile, in the same time period in Ukraine, outside of the pro-Russian area in the southeast, the following was reported. January 29th. Former chairman of the local government in the Kharkov region, Alexei Kolesnik, hanged himself. February 24th. Stanislav Melnik, M-E-L-N-I-K, a member of the opposition party Partia Regionov, shot himself. February 25th. The mayor of Melyapud, Sergei Valter, hanged himself a few hours before his trial. February 26th, Alexander Bordiga, B-O-R-D-I-U-G-A, deputy director of the Melitopol police, was found dead in his garage. That same day, February 26th, Alexander Peklushenko, P-E-K-L-U-S-E-H-E-N-K-O, a former member of the Ukrainian parliament and former mayor of Zaporizhia, Zaporizhia, was found shot to death. February 28th, Mikhail Chetvertov, a former member of parliament, member of the opposition party Partia Regionov, quote, fell, unquote, from the window of the 17th floor apartment in Kiev. March 14th, the 32-year-old prosecutor in Odessa, Sergei Melnichuk, M-E-L-N-I-C-H-U-K, quote, fell, unquote, to his death from the ninth floor. The party Rajonov directly accused the Ukrainian government in the deaths of their party members and appealed to the West to react to these events. In the parlance at the time, good luck with that. And resuming with the text, quote, we appeal to the European Union, the Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe, and European and international human rights organizations to immediately react to the situation in Ukraine and give a legal assessment of the criminal actions of the Ukrainian government, which cynically murders its political opponents, unquote. Skipping down. Actually, another article in that same context. also from Consortium News of April 17th of 2015, How Ukraine Commemorates the Holocaust. This one is by Robert Perry, again, skipping down. Over the past several months, there have been about 10 mysterious deaths of opposition figures, some that the government claimed to be suicides, while others were clearly murders. It now appears that pro-government death squads are operating with impunity in Kiev. On Wednesday, Oleg Kalashnikov, a political leader of the opposition party of Regions, was shot to death in his home. Kalashnikov, note this, this is the guy who was shot to death in his home. Kalashnikov had been campaigning for the right of Ukrainians to celebrate the Allied victory in World War II, a gesture that infuriated some Western Ukrainian neo-Nazis who identify with Adolf Hitler and the Third Reich and who feel they have the current government in their corner. On Thursday, unidentified government murdered Ukrainian journalist Olesh Buzina, that's O-L-E-S-B-U-Z-I-N-A, a regular critic who had protested censorship being imposed on news outlets that didn't toe the government's propaganda line. Buzina had been denounced by a pro-regime, quote, journalistic, unquote, outfit, which operated under the Orwellian name Stop Censorship, unquote, and demanded that Buzina be banned from making media appearances because he was, quote, an agent of the Kremlin, unquote.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. All of Dave Emery's 36 years of work is available for download on the SpitfireList.com website. The site also features many articles not included in programs, as well as a small library of old anti-fascist books. All of the material on the website is available for free. Sister station WFMU is podcasting the For the Record programs. To subscribe to the podcast, use the link at the top of the description for this program or on the front page.
This week, another dissident journalist, Sergei Sukhobok, was reportedly killed in Kiev amid sketchy accounts that his assailants may have been caught, although the Ukrainian government has withheld details. These deaths are mostly ignored by the mainstream U.S. media. And skipping down again, German Wings, actually moving to the next article. German Wings cockpit recording to be analyzed for alarms and voices before crash. This is by Kim Wilshire of the L.A. Times of March 25th of 2015. Skipping down. Yvonne Selke, S-E-L-K-E, was a contract employee of the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, which produces maps and interprets satellite imagery for U.S. intelligence operatives and special operations missions. It is that agency that produced models of Osama bin Laden's house in Pakistan to help Navy SEALs in the raid that killed the al-Qaeda leader. Well, again, I wonder if, and this is pure speculation, I wonder if perhaps she was dissenting from the party line that the Russia had invaded Ukraine and U.S. Government reconnaissance satellite photos don't show such an invasion. Those photos, quote, proving, unquote, that invasion have come from a private company called Digital Globe, as we have seen in the past. And again, I wonder if the pilot might have actually been a mind control job. Again, pure speculation, but certainly I would think German intel, which is deeply involved in this whole Ukrainian fiasco, or imbroglio, I should say, has mind control capabilities. I wonder, again, if her death has anything to do with the bogus satellite proof of Russian invasion and the alleged shootdown of Malaysian Airlines plane Flight MH17 by separatists. And again, U.S. satellite reconnaissance photos do not prove a Russian invasion of Ukraine, or disprove a Russian invasion of Ukraine, and also alleged that it was a Ukrainian government battery, perhaps operated by drunken soldiers, that actually did that shoot down. Another really scary article. Email traffic of UK Atomic Weapons Organization hijacked and rerouted to Ukraine. This is from the Next Go blog of March 13th of 2015. It's unclear how the internet traffic for many British telecom customers, including a defense contractor that helps make nuclear warheads, was diverted to servers in Ukraine before being passed along to its intended recipients. The snag may have allowed adversaries to intercept or tamper with communications sent and received by the UK Atomic Weapons Establishment, one of its affected clients, skipping down. The circuitous path caused the data, quote, to travel thousands of miles to the Ukrainian capital of Kiev before turning around, retracing that route, and being delivered to its normal hub in London, Ars Technica reports. Sending the data to Kiev made it possible for employees with network access to Ukrainian telecom provider Vega to eavesdrop or manipulate data that wasn't encrypted. In this context, I would note that, among others, Andrei Beletsky, the commander of the Azov battalion, has said that Ukraine needs to acquire nuclear weapons. Other people have said the same thing. And again, whether there's any connection between that and the rerouting of information about nuclear weapons to Ukraine is anybody's guess. It certainly doesn't make me feel very good about things. And we're going to conclude with an article from the Washington's blog of June 9th of 2015, an article by Eric Zuse, capital Z-U-E-S-S-E. The reversal of Kerry's Ukraine statement came from Obama, not Nuland. And what this talks about is John Kerry, the U.S. Secretary of State, who, by the way, has not been very visible. He allegedly broke his leg in a bicycle accident. He's been sort of in the background when he has been seen at all recently. And he attempted to basically cause Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko to prevail on him to chill out in some of the things that he was saying. And in particular, Poroshenko has been saying that they're going to reinvade the Donbas region of eastern Ukraine, and they're going to invade Crimea. Well, that could certainly, if they reinvade the Donbas region, then that is going to reignite hostilities in eastern Ukraine. If they try to invade Crimea, that may very well result in a third world war. That is not going to be good. From the Washington's blog of June 9th of 2015, the reversal of Kerry's Ukraine statement came from Obama, not Nuland. When Assistant Secretary of State Victoria Nuland on May 15th contradicted her boss John Kerry's statement of 3 days earlier, in which Kerry had warned Ukraine's President Petro Poroshenko not to violate the Minsk II agreement and not to invade Crimea and not to reinvade Donbas, the source of this reversal was actually U.S. President Barack Obama and not Victoria Nuland, as the State Department reported, skipping down. This likewise explains the reason why Ukraine's President Poroshenko, as I reported on June 7th, said again on June 5th that Ukraine will retake both Crimea and Donbas. That is not good. It remains to be seen, of course, if that actually happens, but certainly that is a very unappetizing prospect. Again, Third World War doesn't sound like a lot of fun to me. It is, to me, stunning, frankly, to witness the dimensions of what is taking place in Ukraine. It is, at one level, absolutely comical, because the people who are in the forefront of the, quote, sharing European values, people like Assistant Finance Minister Gianluca Murillo, who is posing for pictures on social media that are reminiscent of Sharon Stone in the movie Basic Instinct. And you have Natalie Jureska, her immediate superior, who has been accused by her ex-husband of serious financial mismanagement in connection with a U.S. taxpayer-funded $150 million fund that she managed for the Agency for International Development. She is now going along with Yatsenyuk when he's saying they're going to suspend payments to creditors. You have Franklin Templeton, one of those creditors, saying that they think that the Ukrainian government has plenty of money, that they could make those payments, but that it is stashed in their central bank. And the fellow who's saying that is the Ukrainian Prime Minister Arseniy Yatsenyuk. And Yatsenyuk is now being investigated for having helped to embezzle $325 million, allegedly embezzled $325 million. It is at one level comical and at another level grotesque. And again, coming back to a theme that I have sounded in so many programs about Ukraine. I've talked about All's Well That's Orwell, the Ministry of Truth and the Ukrainian Crisis, and a half dozen different programs comparing the utter perversion of political and historical reality in Ukraine to the Nazi tracked serpent's walk in which the SS go underground, build up their economic muscle, buy into the opinion-forming media, and after the U.S. is decimated by a series of terrorist attacks using WMDs, martial law is declared, and the descendants of the SS who have infiltrated the military take over the country. Key to that is the buying into the American opinion-forming media and the use of those to stand historical and political reality on its head and make the Nazis out to be good guys and the Allies out to be bad guys. And that basically is exactly what we are seeing in Ukraine, and not just in Ukraine, as we looked at in For the Record program 548, Walking the Snake in the Baltic States. That same thing is happening in the Baltic States as well, where the SS are being portrayed as freedom fighters. And I would also note that our media are basically doing something very similar. They are portraying outright fascists and people who were unabashed allies of the Third Reich as freedom fighters or, quote, Democrats, unquote. The most virulent among them are being portrayed as ultra-nationalists. Again, if Adolf Hitler came back to life today and began pursuing his political agenda, our media would label him as a paleoconservative whom critics accuse of pursuing an ultra-nationalist agenda. Yep, Serpent's Walk is right on track. I use a very pedantic format for this program much of the time. If listeners find the presentation to be a little bit overwhelming, please look at the description for the Record program, all the For the Record shows, because each For the Record program contains, has an article length description featuring all of the text and very often information that I don't have time to present in the original program. Also, note that a very skilled contributing editor who posts under the name of Terra Fractal, PTERRAFRACTYL, is making some fabulous contributions, so you can subscribe to the comments by Terra Fractal and other skilled listeners. And you can also subscribe to the For the Record programs, the Food for Thought posts that appear from time to time in the upper left-hand corner of the front page of the website, as well as the RSS feeds as well. For example, GermanForeignPolicy.com and Global Muslim Brotherhood Daily Report. And I would recommend that people do that. This concludes For the Record program number 850, Update on Fascism in Ukraine. This is being recorded on June 14th of the year 2015. I'm Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.